Welcome, everybody, to OmniTalks After the Five, brought to you by Delivery Solutions, who orchestrate and optimize local delivery. Visit them at deliverysolutions.co. Well, Carter.
Here we are.
Here we are. It's just you and I. Chris is on a beach somewhere, hopefully drinking heavily. And so
a well-deserved break from everything.
Yes, absolutely. So he's left this to us this week. So after the five readers, I'm going to apologize in advance for the less intellectual nature, I'm sure.
We're going to try to mimic his humor a little bit, right? And we'll see how we do.
Yeah, we'll try. Maybe not less intellectual. We'll try our best there. But I think there will definitely be fewer movie references
in this podcast. Well, the Fast Five was a ton of fun this week. I think if you haven't listened to it, definitely listen to that. We're going to kind of go a little bit more in depth to kind of what Anne was able to take on in kind of that quick 6-minute Fast Five version. But you kind of started out with this deal with Ross Stores, surpassing all benchmarks, opening new stores. Tell us about that.
Yeah, I just think it's fascinating. I mean, that shopping experience. Have you been in a Ross
store? Okay, so I have to say, I've never been in a Ross store.
I feel like this is becoming a trend.
I know. I'm just kind of this token millennial here in the corner who hasn't been on anything except Amazon and in an Apple retail store, which I'll bring up again in a couple of minutes. But the fact is, I've never been in a Ross store, but I hear it's great.
What about like a TJ Maxx or Marshalls?
I have. Okay, so I've been in a Marshalls.
Okay.
I love Marshalls. Okay. And I think that my experience in a Marshalls store mirrors or parallels some of the things that Ross is finding success in.
Yeah.
It's the searching and kind of discovering these deals that you're not able to get anywhere else. It's used the word, what was it? It wasn't hide and seek. It was finding
treasure hunt.
Treasure hunt. That's right. But I was looking into this as you were putting this together this week, how these stores, well, one of the big reasons their prices are so low is they don't have to support or attempt to support some e-commerce attempt.
Not at all.
And I think it's interesting, and it was actually, you know, some of these stores, you look at TJ Maxx and Ross, do have e-commerce platforms. However, they're not real. Like, I mean, they don't really have a ton of product on them, and they don't even report their sales numbers because they're so minimal.
Right. Well, and the effort that they'd have to go to actually put the product online is so great. And clearly they're opening 100 new stores. They don't need to do that. They're the one person, which is shocking to me because, again, you know, I don't mind going through there, but if you ask my husband to go to a Marshalls store, he would rather do anything than ever have to do that.
Okay, so fill me in on this. Is this like an afternoon that you go and like people are sifting through these piles?
Oh, yeah.
And
it's like that rap song, like racks on racks on racks.
Just over and over.
Yeah, just so much digging. I mean, you might as well.
But it's worth it. Clearly, customers are liking it. They enjoy this.
You can get some quality product for the price, that's for sure. I think the problem is as soon as somebody figures out how to do this online in a better way, I mean, you look at like Wayfair as an example of somebody who's starting to do this. But as soon as somebody figures out how to do this well online, these businesses are crushed.
But do you think so? I'm trying to think. So what company comes closest? And we'll just quick compare it to Amazon because it's easy to do, right?
Yeah.
But I say, you know, I'm looking for a clothing item, which is a loaded topic. You know, we can go into that a different time about looking for that online. But if I find cheaper things, I immediately associate it with poorer quality, mm-hmm. right? I've been burned in the past, you know, wow, that price is too good to be true. And usually it is too good to be true. You get a knockoff pair of headphones or you get a really thin jacket that you thought was of quality. But do you think there's something there about like the tactile nature of actually being in a retail store, finding the deal and actually verifying that it is really the pair of Levi's jeans that you were hoping it was?
Yeah, I think this is why these larger department stores, their models have moved to this off-price retail brand. I mean, you look at Saks, you look at Nordstrom Rack, you look at even Macy's, their Backstage brand. They're all making all of the money, and I guess some of the recognition that the name gets helps that mindset of like I'm actually getting a pair of Levi's jeans. This isn't going to be like somebody that took a pair of Cherokee brand Target jeans and sewed the Levi's logo
right,
on them.
Right.
So yeah, we'll see.
But they're opening new stores, leaving big box retailers like Macy's in the dust. And we had Macy's today on the list as well.
Oh, man.
Right?
The smile that crossed my face when I read that Macy's headline this week was like, this is manna from the heavens. Like, we've been given a gift, Fast Five, because this is the most ridiculous thing happening.
So let me get this straight, right? If I ever had gone to a Macy's before, I would right. I would walk in, download the app, which is we all know, and this is a whole other topic, such as the Amazon, you know, with apparel, but actually authenticating your phone, download an app, hoping the Wi-Fi or whatever is in the store good enough.
You didn't even talk about Wi-Fi.
Oh, it's just like a nightmare, right? So you download the app. You probably sign up for an account, I would imagine, which I'm sure is a horrible user experience. And then there's four or five more steps you talked about. You got to find the item, scan it in, find an associate, which is incredibly hard from what I know. And then ultimately stand in a line, verify, remove the security. And what, 20 minutes later, you're out the door? Like, why wouldn't I just bring that to one of the standard point of sale systems?
I don't get it. I do not understand. Seven steps. There are seven steps. So you look at the people that are still shopping at Macy's too. I mean, let's be real with the amount of time that it's going to take somebody who doesn't like using their phone for most things. Like, this is not solving the problem for them.
Here's my other thing though too. High dollar item at, let's say we can use Macy's for example. A high dollar item there is what, $100, right?
Maybe. It depends on what day of the week it is and how much.
That's true.
What the
you mentioned that in the articles this week.
Yeah.
But I mean, we're not talking huge dollar items here. We're not talking laptop computers or smartphones or anything like that. And so, like, is it really worth maybe the few that might get lifted during, you know, the loss in that to really make that customer experience for the rest of the public that horrible?
Yeah, I don't know. I mean, it's painful. I mean, it's honestly embarrassing for Macy's. I feel like I just want to go give Jeff Gennett a hug at Shop Talk next week and say, buddy, we gotta find a better way for you.
Yeah, I always bring up Apple, right?
Yeah.
And they've had a system like this in place through the Apple Store app, which is, for those who are listening, you know, very different than the actual App Store, which is digital apps. They have an Apple Store app, which has been known since it launched as being like one of the best, you know, kind of retail, not components, but partners as you shop in one of their physical stores. But a couple of years ago, it's probably 4 or 5 years ago now, they introduced a similar process where you could actually scan an item and walk out. The great thing about that is that, you know, Apple to this day is one of the, is the top, or the organization has the most amount of saved credit cards. Mm-hmm. And right, so they have all your payment information, they know who you are, they know everything, you scan it in, you authenticate with Touch ID, and within a few seconds you walk out. It was fascinating though, is that they're, you know, their retail employees are instructed just to not even, like, don't worry about it.
Right.
And, you know, the top dollar items on an Apple Store shelf are $400 or $500, $600.
Mm-hmm.
And Apple has said, you know what, the customer experience for the honest is worth, you know, maybe a few different pairs of Beats headphones that might get walked out the front door without actually scanning through.
Right.
But it just seems like the exact opposite of what Macy's should really be trying to do.
Totally. And I think it goes back to, like, Macy's, the service model. Like, let's, your problem, Jeff, you said it. You said the problem is that there's not enough people there that are helping your customers. I don't know why he completely just glossed over that part and went right to mobile checkout. I feel for the guy. I hope that, you know, he's going to test this and then figure out it's a disaster and move on to hopefully changing the service model. That's my hope for them.
Yeah. And you look at these traditional retailers trying to move into the digital world, but we also talked about, like, a digitally focused, digital first retailer who has done incredible work, like, kind of moving into the physical retail experience. That's Warby Parker.
Yeah, absolutely. Carter, I have a little story to share with you.
Perfect.
So, we have a Warby Parker, store, in a store in Minneapolis here. And I brought my dad to Warby Parker for the first time this past weekend. And granted, it was a Saturday, so it was busy. But we were wall-to-wall people, and there was not a hipster in sight. It was all people my dad's age. He's in his early 60s, and it was him and probably 20 other people in there buying glasses. And the people whose minds were being blown in there from, like, $200 is just for the lenses, right? And when my dad heard that he was getting two pair of glasses for $200, it was like
mind blowing.
Yeah. He didn't know what to do. And you see all these people in there having this really great experience. I mean, it's just the beginning for Warby Parker and this audience. And I'm excited about the amount of money that they're getting. And they're, like I said, in the Fast Five, that they're still able to stay private, because if they can apply this model to, you know, eyeglasses, I can't wait to see what possibilities they have as they expand into other markets and other products.
Even. Yeah, that's what I was just going to say. They got a huge chunk of money, mm-hmm. right? And you talked about, you know, some of the structural things they'll probably be able to do with that. But then you also talked about new service and new products. Mm-hmm. Now, we've seen some of the new services from a technology standpoint. We talked about that a few weeks ago, right? We looked at where they're actually able to offer prescription services via their app and an online resource. What are the things do you think is going to come out of Warby Parker, right? New products? Are they going to expand beyond sunglasses and glasses? Like, what else could they do?
I think so. I mean, it's got to be, there's got to be something. And my mind immediately went to, what are other things that the boomer industry, what are they paying, you know, ridiculous amounts of money for that they could try to find a better way to solve? And I guess I could go to other things like vitamins, or, you know, they do still do the one-for-one model with the glasses. So what would be other product categories that they could get into where they could still offer that one-for-one model, but within a different, I guess, category?
Yeah, the one-for-one model has been interesting, right? Because that's kind of how they all got started. That's mm-hmm. really kind of how they gained kind of a foothold within the market and kind of touting that, minus the fact they had $100 glasses. But it doesn't seem to be kind of a focus of their communications anymore. I think, you know, we often forget that that's actually happening behind the scenes, right, in addition to getting two pairs of glasses, right, for $100 or, yeah, $200.
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah, I think we'll see where they go. What do you think? You have any ideas?
You know, they're innovating in unique ways of actually making the process that they've kind of championed even better, right? Mm-hmm. So you look at what they did with the iPhone 10 and really using the Face ID features. They were one of the first kind of companies that took Face ID to the next level, where they're actually able to scan users' face using, right, the Pixel Dot camera and actually place digital frames on you in a really mm-hmm. unique way. So it almost replaces the try-on. And
did
then
you ever do that, by the way?
I don't have a nice enough phone to do
that.
Oh
God. I'm just talking about like the first, do you remember when they first were doing it and like how creepy you look with a fake pair of glasses on?
Oh yeah. It's not great, but I think they'll continue to go down that road. How do they make, and you see it with the prescription, you know, I gave that story a couple weeks ago. It's
right.
I don't want to go to the doctor. It's a couple $100. It's down the street. Mm-hmm. Like, how else can they, you know, speed up the process? How else can they make that easier? And what other markets potentially, talk about vitamins or whatever that might be, how else can they do that? I was going to say hearing aids, which I know is not.
Yeah.
I mean, I think I don't have a ton of experience in that market, but I wonder even if like customized headphones or hearing protection or, mm-hmm. you know, whatever it might be. I'm excited to see what happens.
Well, boomers, we're holding out for you.
There you go. All right, Alibaba, the next story. Yeah. You had talked a little bit about an investment. Well, it's not about Alibaba, but Jack Ma investing in Rent the Runway.
Mm-hmm.
What does that mean for Rent the Runway then?
Well, I think, again, you know, we're going back to being able to stay private for a little bit longer and not being beholden to Wall Street and being able to really work within your own company and take risks that you might not be able to if you have to report certain numbers. But their expertise at Alibaba will now, you know, help Rent the Runway launch into this tricky market. I mean, they're smart to have stayed consistent in, I think, the U.S. market for this long. They launched their monthly subscription clothing service now. So for $89, women can get clothes and send them back. And so it's not just the high-end dress market anymore.
And forgive me, I've never actually used this service before.
Yeah.
But the $89, it's not like a trunk club type thing, right? It's not saying you keep them. It's just the idea, right, that you're able to, for $89, they'll send you whatever amount and you, yeah, wear them to an event or whatever you want to do with that.
Yeah.
And then you're able to return them knowing full well that you actually wore it without.
Yeah. There's some other competitors out there too. Latote is one. And what's great about these services is, yeah, it sounds a little creepy at first. You kind of got to get over that initial threshold, at least for people, I think, in my age demographic, the younger millennials might not have as much of a problem with that, but it was really great. I mean, when I was pregnant, they have a pregnant clothing box. So I would get, you know, 4 dresses to wear on interviews when I was interviewing for a job at 8 months pregnant, and I would wear them and send them back the next week. So what they're great at doing is, you know, you can send that box back and forth 5 or 6 times a month if you want to. It's just about giving you the opportunity. And it's really interesting. The whole basis for Rent the Runway was that her, Jennifer Hyman's sister, didn't want to be photographed in the same dress now. So it's not necessarily that she needs the ownership or she wants, you know, to have this large closet. It's just, she doesn't want to be seen in the same outfit twice, on social media. So I think, you know, as we progress and go down and see where Rent the Runway goes as they expand their business, especially potentially into the Asian markets now, just how big it will get and when they'll decide to go public.
Yeah. And kind of going back to some of the stuff we talked about with Parker, what other services are right on their doorstep? Like, what else could they be adding to that? Are there other things they could offer? Are there other things in the same kind of subscription, use once, return type thing that you think they might look into?
I don't know. If I had to guess, I would say, you know, they're already renting everything from handbags, you know, to shoes, to jewelry. But I would be interested to see a beauty partnership happen. We haven't, to my knowledge, seen that done yet. So I guess I would, especially as they start to go into Asian markets and start to, you know, the Korean beauty, that whole industry has exploded. I think, you know, what they have access to, and especially again with advisors from Alibaba, it's limitless.
And forgive me, like I said, I've never used it. Is there a men's offering for Rent the Runway?
I don't think so. I know that their mission is really empowering women and making them feel confident in their clothing, but I know there are other similar men's renting subscription services out there.
Very cool. On to the giant. Oh, it's not an episode without mentioning Walmart.
I know, right? It's become like our little friend. Our Walmart. Go-to. So Walmart, this was your story, Carter, that you broke for us this week.
Yeah, broke it. Well, so Walmart is taking their grocery delivery service from, I think it was 6 test markets to 100 new markets across the country. And I think you brought the stat into encompassing 40% of the U.S. population. Walmart, in the last couple of years, we've seen do a lot with grocery, obviously the introduction of grocery, and then now in the last year or two, offering pickup services. Mm-hmm. But the new delivery service is fascinating. But it's interesting. It's not free. Mm-hmm. It's $9.95 a delivery. But it works in a really unique way. And they're going up against the likes of Amazon, Whole Foods. They're going up against Instacart. They're going up against Target's new partnership. There's a lot of things that are going on there. And I know you mentioned in the Fast Five, Ann, you're thinking that they might be going after a little bit of demographic at $9.95. Is that a lot of money, you think, to get your groceries delivered? Is it worth it?
I mean, I think it definitely puts them in a different mix, you know, like charging $9.95. I guess I question if their existing, you know, if the existing Walmart customers right now, they can still go to the store and pick up their groceries for free. If they're going to be willing to pay that much, and you know, Walmart has other initiatives, their free shipping 2-day delivery and other things like that. I mean, I guess it depends on what the urgency is and the need of getting those items. But I think most importantly, it's available now.
Yeah, I think, and you brought up a really good point. I was going to kind of counter that, you know, because I wrote a little post about this over the week, and you know, I said, well, $9.95, you know, I can speak for myself, but for a lot of people, you know, they don't have necessarily easy transportation to get to the grocery store. You might have multiple things that are going on throughout the day, so to save an hour to go get your groceries is probably completely worth $9.95. Mm-hmm. Also too, if you know, you have a family that you need to drag along. I mean, there's a lot of things that go on with, I think, you know, a standard family that $9.95 would probably be worth it. But then you brought up the point just now of this idea of, well, there are already free options. Mm-hmm. With groceries, you know, like probably I won't be statistical about it, but a lot of your list is planned. You know, you need eggs, you know, you need milk, you know, you need like the standard list.
Right.
And so why do you need it now, right, versus the 2-day free delivery? And if you could save $10 by just thinking ahead and saying, hey, we're probably going to need some new things here on Thursday, mm-hmm. or for us, Monday, whatever it might be, you might potentially, you know, opt in for the free version rather than paying $10 to have it there within the next couple hours.
Right. Yeah, I think the other thing that could play into this eventually too is tipping and the actual drivers. So Chris and I did a post back this past summer about Amazon, when Amazon Prime Pantry came into the market. And, you know, when you add up all the fees, you know, it ends up being more than $10 for delivery. So for I think that there's that component of it. And then I'm also interested, kind of a behind the scenes part of all of this grocery delivery and determining who they end up choosing, all of you know, Walmart's business, who they end up choosing as their delivery solution, what that means for the people that are delivering the groceries. Because I did do some exploration recently into, you know, how much money these drivers are making. And it's not a lot. I mean, you have to be really good and really optimize your delivering of these products in order to make this worth your while. And depending on, you know, different companies have different opinions on how much they promote tipping these drivers too. So I actually think that will be an interesting thing to watch, to see how that comes into play too with, you know, how well the groceries are being delivered, what the service level is of those groceries being brought into people's houses versus dropped on the step, and, you know, how compelled those people in this industry are to really, they're the last mile. So they're the ones that are interacting with the customers, and that will determine whether or not I think the $10 delivery fee is worth it.
Totally. And my experience doesn't necessarily come with groceries, but, you know, you look at Amazon Prime versus Amazon Now here in, you know, the Minneapolis market, we have the ability to do 2-hour delivery of most or a lot of Amazon products. And I'd probably say I've used it, you know, and if you were paralleling that with the grocery delivery, I've used it probably 4 or 5 times in the last 6 months. And that's not to say I'm not using Amazon. We're using Amazon. We're having shipments of Amazon every day. It's just, it's hard to find products that you need in the moment.
Right.
And I think that could be an interesting parallel with what we're seeing here with Walmart and how it kind of gets adopted. But needless to say, they are going up against some pretty big competition, and it'll be interesting to see who wins this kind of grocery battle.
Yeah, absolutely.
So we have some announcements before we wrap up this week. I think the first thing I wanted to mention is that the Q4 conference master's class is coming up here in a couple weeks here in Minneapolis. And one of the big things about this is it's not necessarily a conference style. We had a really awesome time here a couple months ago where ultimately we were able to bring, you know, people together, retailers and experts and brand representatives from around the state together this fall. But this one is more of a hands-on leadership workshop. It's a completely different world. And for more information, you can actually go to the Q4 unconference.com. That's CUE, the number 4, unconference.com for more information and tickets. So definitely check that out when you have a second. It's going to be a really, really fun time. Both Chris and I will be speaking and leading a couple different breakout sessions there. So we hope to see you then.
And Chris and I will also be out at Shop Talk in Las Vegas this week. So if any of you listeners are going to be there, make sure you drop us a line. And as always, we love to hear your comments and suggestions for future topics on After the Five. So you can send those to info@redarcherretail.com. And thank you to all of you who've done that already.
Perfect. I think that's it. Wrapping up here. I think one of the big things is we'd love subscribers to our podcast. As Anne mentioned, if you have any comments, we'd love to hear them at the info@redarcherretail.com address that she just left. Also, comments on Apple Podcasts are definitely appreciated. And you can go to omnitalk.blog or redarcherretail.com for more info.
See you next week.
See you next week.